Good morning.
Love
Welcome
Talk Radio.
To Hope Is Now, a radio blogcast sponsored by the Respite, a center for grief and hope. My name is Mandy Epley, and I am your host this morning, and I am joined by my dear soul sister, dear friend and partner at the Respite, Cindy Bolero, who is our lovely, juicy producer of the show this morning. Thank you, Cindy, for being the guide and helping us monitor all the details of this powerful show we're going to be bringing to you today. Today, we have the privilege and the honor to interview Catherine Getzke, who is the founder of Mood Factory and iFred, a nonprofit that is all about ending the stigma and eradicating the stigma of depression in the world. So I want to give you a chance to say good morning, Catherine. Are you there?
I am here. Good morning, everyone. It's great to be here. It's good to talk to you guys.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us and being with us, Catherine. I'm so happy that people are going to hear about your work, about your story, about your heartbreak, your gorgeous humanity, and how you have chosen to use that to serve the world. So for you listeners out there, I have this idea of doing interviews of people that I really admire and who have these just very human stories, extraordinary stories and very down-to-the-earth, gritty stories, and how much that helps us and empowers us to hear about other people's journeys. I know for me, whenever I hear about someone else's life, it helps me put the flesh on the bones of my own life. It helps me make sense out of my own world. And that sense of community really encourages us and inspires us to keep going, to keep moving, to keep growing, to keep speaking. And today, as we hear about Catherine and her very human and powerful story and her work in the world, we're also going to be exploring step six of the model of heart-centered grief. I've had the honor and the privilege to co-create the model of heart-centered grief with our dear friend and colleague, Chris Saadi. This step six service to the world is about how to take our losses, the things that happen to us in our lives, whether it is a significant tragedy, a heartbreak, or an everyday disappointment, and how to use those losses in service of the world. Because what we find in the world and what I always say and I see in the world is who better to serve the world around its aches and needs and longings and change than those who themselves have been brokenhearted. It's those of us who have open hearts that are the most passionate about bringing change and help to the world. And Catherine Getzke, my dear friend, is one of those ladies. So again, Catherine, welcome this morning. And I just want to give you a chance to say whatever's in your heart, and then I'm going to start exploring with you about your life and your story. So what would you, anything that's on your heart this morning that you'd like to share before we begin?
Yeah, I really thank you for the opportunity of being here. I do think some of the most tragic kind of circumstances or, like you said, biggest heartbreaks, they have the power to either destroy us or to really move us into our mission and life's purpose. And
yeah.
And I think it's so amazing what you're doing and teaching people how to take that energy of pain and really use it in a transformative process to create something beautiful in our lives, kind of
yes.
As opposed to doing something that hurts us or that further and deepens our pain. So I just really want to commend you all and the work that you're doing in the Respite and the work that you're teaching people how to do this with themselves, because you've definitely taught me a lot. And I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you for your words. And that's exactly what we're about today, what the Respite work is about, what the model is about, and what you're doing is taking our humanity, taking our stories, using our lives and using our heartbreak in service and using, I love how you said that, using our energy. So think about that as you're listening to us today, friends, about the energy in your own life, the losses that you've experienced in your own journey, and where that is calling you. You know, a big clue for us around our personal calling and our longings is what, as our dear friend Andrew Harvey says, what breaks our heart the most. What breaks our heart the most is a huge key and clue to where we're being called to serve and give back in the world. So, Catherine, if you would share with us about one of your great heartbreaks of your life and tell us about that very personal story for you. And then we're going to explore how that catapulted you into your calling.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's, you know, and I'm sure I'll get pretty emotional during this. My biggest heartbreak, and it's coming on 25 years, as I had ironically enough shared with you, and I wasn't even aware of that, but it's been 25 years this Sunday, and I lost my father to suicide. He took his own life. And, you know, this is the man who was my hero, who was I looked up to. He was a really amazing, intelligent, energetic, spirited human being that was, you know, in retail banking and so enthusiastic and so passionate about life. But he also had a deep struggle with mental health issues. And, you know, my whole life was spent trying to make my dad happy and proud and kind of fix his broken heart.
Yeah.
And so maybe you can imagine, I mean, I was a freshman in college, and he took his life, and it was devastating to me, truly, truly devastating. And I, you know, then went on to struggle with my own, dealing with my own pain about that in a really negative and kind of self-defeating and self-harming way. And that to me, I mean, that to me, when a person can't find their own light, that to me is a major, because no matter what happens in someone's life, I mean, there is always a reason and purpose for a person. I truly believe that.
Yes. Amen. I want to just reflect back for you and for all the listeners. I mean, really, Cindy and I are here together, and just, I mean, the room here where we are is just filled with you, filled with the love for your father, filled with your, I mean, it's it really moves me so deeply. And, you know, your father's spirit around how, you know, this vibrant human being, you know, this larger-than-life personality, and you totally, as we daughters are so often with our fathers, I know that's how I feel about my own father, you know, just we're in love with our daddies. We look up to them. They're, you know, they are our heroes. And for you to so much, you know, want, you knew as a child, as a young woman, intuitively that your father was in pain and that there wasn't language for that, and that you really wanted to help his heart and wanted him to be proud of you and wanted to, you know, help him and heal him, if you will. And that's something that we can't do for other people, but we as children and even as adults, sometimes we don't know that. And for him to then, as you are a young woman, stepping from teenagedom into adulthood as he takes his own life. And I mean, it makes sense to everyone that's listening and who will listen to this through the power of the internet throughout time, how earth-shattering and annihilating that was for you. And I just want to say to you, I just, you know, so much acknowledgement with every piece of energy that I have around how that shattered you. And then, you know, so often what we do, because we don't know any better, we don't know any better. And this is where we have to have compassion for ourselves and compassion for others, is that we do become often self-destructive because there isn't a map and there isn't a guide. And when we love that much, we equally hurt that deeply. And so, you know, in some respects, it's like, well, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that you struggled for many years. And because that's what we do. I mean, anyone that's listening can relate to this in your story. We've all had times in our lives as human beings where we've had great heartbreak and it hurts so deeply that we don't know what to do, and that pain tricks us into harming ourselves.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yep. So true.
So what I would love for you to be able to share in whatever way you want to, and thank you for being so open with our listeners today and with me and Cindy here together, that, you know, however you want to share about then through your journey as you found your way, you know what Mood Factory has meant to you, the company that you established, what iFred is about for you, how you have taken that very real pain and, you know, chose to stop harming you and to decide, what am I going to do about all this?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. It's like you say, our biggest kind of tragedy and heartbreak can also be our greatest blessing, and that is through learning how to channel that energy in the right way. That in a sense is what it's become, because some of the work I'm doing now is just, it's the most healing. So
yeah.
I escaped, and but I went on to go into business. I did a master's in international business, and I worked for a number of big companies and got experience and knew I wanted to kind of put my own creation into the world. I was very inspired by business and retail and getting products into the market that were intentional, so really had a positive kind of impact, that weren't just new products for the sake of new products. So we started researching, and of course I was fascinated with mood and what impacts our mood and what impacts how we feel, and how can I kind of feel better. You know, how could my dad have felt better, but how can I feel better? And so I researched colors and moods, and kind of looked at the lighting industry and realized that not much had been done with the light bulb in a very long time. And again, this was 20 years ago, so a lot has happened since then. But I decided to apply the colors to light bulbs and create my own colored light bulb product line. So, you know, when I did that, I knew that it's great to do cause marketing and important, and it's a good way to raise money for charities is by giving back a portion of the proceeds of new products. And so I wanted to do that for depression, to kind of honor my dad and honor his struggle and my own personal struggle. And so I went to depression.org, and I looked at the website at depression.org, and there were silhouettes of people with their head in their hands, and there were tears coming down the screen, and I thought, oh my gosh, that is so depressing. You know, I am getting more depressed just by learning about it.
No kidding.
So I researched more about depression and learned, well, it's actually not that depressing because it's treatable. So it's one of the most treatable disease states there are. And but so much of the focus and the energy around depression was negative and depressing. And so I talked to a few nonprofits kind of about rebranding, and at the time they weren't as open to it. I mean, now it's a lot better, but I knew intuitively that until the conversation around depression changed from one of despair and hopelessness and loneliness to one of treatment and hope,
yes,
that people wouldn't start getting treated. And at the time, it was less than 25% of those with depression were getting treatment. And then there were 121 million people around the world with depression, so that's, you know, 90 million people untreated, and the primary reason is stigma.
Yes.
And then what is stigma? It's really just, it's a lack of an understanding, it's a lack of information, it's not really, it's, and it's kind of not wanting to be associated.
Yes.
So
yes.
that propelled me to, and again, you know, I didn't have a lot of money. I was putting everything into this new product, but I felt strongly, intuitively in my heart that I needed to be doing something for depression, that I knew from my marketing and branding and then, you know, psychology background as well, that if we changed how people, the whole conversation around depression from one of hopelessness to hope and what can we do and how can we empower people, that we could then make real change. So that's, you know, I launched the product line and then I launched the foundation for depression.
Oh, my gosh. I don't want to scare you because I personally want to scream. I mean, I'm telling you. I don't want to frighten the list telling you. Catherine, to me, I'm not kidding. And Cindy, hold on to your seat. She doesn't like when I cuss. You are like a badass of spirit and soul, my sister. I mean, look how you took. I mean, do you all hear what this woman did? Look how she took, crawling on the ground. And you all know what it's like to hurt that badly. And through a process, through a journey, I mean, it was many years. It's not been easy. It's still not easy now. But look what you did. It's so incredible. I remember when I first met you, Catherine and I, and Cindy as well as some of our other colleagues, were at a training with Chris Soddy and Andrew Harvey, and we were in downtown Charlotte, North Carolina at the Dunhill. This is where the retreat was being held and led. And I remember our dear friend Barry Sherman said, you've got to meet this woman, Catherine. You're going to be really fascinated by this nonprofit. And then when I understood that you had, you know, come to Charlotte because of the light bulbs at that time, I just remember, like, do you know when you have a girl crush? I was like, I have a crush on this woman. Look at what she's doing in the world. It's incredible. So I want to know, what, when you look at your products, to share more with our listeners, and I want to say this first, you know, friends, as you're listening, you know, think about you. Think about your own story. Think about the places where you have been impacted, where you've been deeply challenged, where you have felt very alone, where you have hurt the most. Those are great keys of information for you around where life is calling you to give back and to serve. And maybe that's going to be for the little old lady who lives around the corner that you take a casserole to. Maybe it will be an organization that you join. Maybe it will be something that you begin yourself. But you and your story are mighty worthy parts of the human story. All of our stories are weaving together to help support humanity, nature, animals, the planet. We are all combining together. Really, we all need each other, and we need your story. So as you hear Catherine's incredible story, don't in any way lessen your journey or your story, because we in the world need you too and need your service as well. So, Catherine, I want to say I'm so fascinated by the lighting. Just tell us, what is one of your favorite products at Mood Factory? What's one of the things you're like, whoa, that is so cool?
Well, it's so fun. It started in lighting, so colored light bulbs, and we sell them at Lowe's Home Improvement. So it has been a long and, you know, adventurous journey for sure. We have now, though, sold 5 million light bulbs, which I am just thrilled, and I never, you know, could have imagined, and
yes.
It's really incredible. And we now, I now am partnering with an artist, Alexandru Zurita, who is a, he's a famous painter, and he's painting our eight moods. You know, again, based on how colors affect
love
your moods.
It.
And they're so beautiful. And it's, so it's really the more I started researching, you know, and I am an information sponge, and then my passion and specialty is new products and branding. That's just my gift, and that's what I'm learning to, you know, really kind of expand. But we then, we also do a scent line now based on how smells affect your moods. So we have white papers on scents and mood, a white paper on colors and moods. And, you know, it turns out the more senses you engage to achieve your desired mood state, the more profound the impact on your mood.
That's amazing.
So we have a body butter line that's USDA organic certified. We have bath crystals for your bath. We have essential oil blends. I mean, it's really, it's just become a creative kind of explosion for me, you know? So, I mean, I love all of it. I love all of it.
And I really see how that is truly, I mean, your gift back to the world. I mean, it's one way that you're giving back an honor of the memory of your father, that, that, you know, the statistics that you were speaking about earlier of how many humans on the planet suffer from depression and how many still are not getting help because of the stigma of depression. I just, you know, I see how it all flows together and how you have gone for great meaning in your work, that, you know, if your father had had access to the help and the care, and if the stigma, if the stigma can shift, then people, regardless of status in life or gender, et cetera, don't feel the shame, you know, that it's okay, that, you know, depression, I mean, the statistics around, you know, Americans alone who are, you know, getting treated for depression, they're very high. I mean, the point is, this is a very normal experience of being human and being alive. This is nothing to be ashamed of. It's something that, it's a part, you know, being human is wonderful and juicy and gorgeous, miraculous, it's incredible, and it ain't easy. We all know that. It
right.
ain't easy at
right.
all.
Yeah.
So I so speak more, if you would. I really want people to hear about iFred and some of the work that you've done. Catherine has traveled the world and even had the opportunity to speak to the United Nations around ending stigma around the world. And this, I know, touches your heart very deeply and profoundly around your father and around all the people that you have met through this journey that you've been on.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, definitely. And I want to just kind of be clear that the Mood Factory, I mean, that's my company, and that it's, I don't create products to treat depression by any means, but they're related to improving your mood and teaching consumers about engaging their senses and how
that's
important
awesome.
That is. The nonprofit aspect is that we've donated in the past a portion of the proceeds to depression and to a foundation. So, you know, one of the ways we change stigma is by getting the message in front of consumers, like educating consumers in a way that's positive. And so, right, iFred was birthed from that. So iFred is kind of, it's a separate foundation and nonprofit. And the goal of it is to end the stigma of depression through kind of education. So we do education, we do celebrity engagement, we've talked to celebrities about it, and then we use the sunflower as the global symbol. And, you know, a symbol, a positive symbol repeated over and over and over again can shift perception. And, you know, in the past, the images that we use associated with depression are images of people looking alone and isolated, usually with their head in their hands, which is a very hopeless kind of an image. So, you know, and then we also teach about the biology of the brain. And like you said, I mean, iFred itself, like I never imagined what the company would turn into, and I also never imagined iFred as a standalone nonprofit what it's turned into. We have planted sunflower fields all over the world in partnership with other nonprofits.
That's so incredible.
It's really, it's beautiful. And to see communities, engage with each other in a way that's, you know, they're gardening and they're talking about it and the sunflowers bloom and there are signs so they, you know, community members say, what is this about? And it, you know, they'll talk about it's to honor people with depression. And it opens the conversation in a way that's kind of never happened before. You know, it's a non-threatening, it's a not a negative, it's a, wow, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I know someone with depression, or my dad has struggled with it, or my daughter. So it gets the conversation going in a way that's uplifting and opening.
Yeah.
So it's
really,
it's been amazing. And then, you know, you mentioned I was invited, to serve on a panel at the United Nations through a group called Fundamental SDGs. So that's a global group of activists. We kind of joined at the World Health Organization. I attend an event there every year. And talking about getting mental health as a part of the Sustainable Development Goals, which are part of the United Nations. It's like a strategic plan for the world. It's like, how do we make this world a better place? And mental health was missing from those goals. And it is, you know, mental health is such a critical part of everything that we do to make this world a better place.
Yeah.
If we want to end poverty, if we want to improve child welfare, if we want to improve maternal health, I mean, we have to look at brain health and mental health. And so this amazing group of activists are working to make that part of the development goals, you know, making the world put this issue, you know, to the forefront, because it's such an important issue and it's been ignored for so very long.
That's so powerful to think about bringing that conversation and legislation in place around, you know, what the United Nations is wanting to accomplish, and to do it without the conversation around mental health, and what you're bringing now brings so much hope to so many people around the world. And I have to say, you know, I'm just, you know, and listeners, if you'll join me, friends, around imagining in your mind these fields of sunflowers all over the world that Catherine and her organization, her nonprofit IFRED, has been about bringing to the world, and how you're saying that has changed the conversation. It opens it up into normalizing this experience of being human. And in a very personal way, I see for you how, you know, day after day that has brought a lot of, you know, like a soothing balm to your heart around the loss of your father and his death from suicide when you were a freshman in college. And to now imagine that there are people all over the U.S. and all over the world, you know, shifting the conversation by hope and by this incredible image of the sunflower. I mean, I really want to honor how you have taken this great heartbreak and suffering. And I want to speak about step 6 of the model, Catherine. How would you say that service has saved your life, if you will, or saved your sanity, if you will? How has this process of giving back really helped you in a personal way?
Oh, it has helped me tremendously. I think, you know, it's easy to run from pain. Like, we make it easy in society to run away from our pain. But it almost destroyed me in my early 20s. I had my own suicide attempt, even after kind of I knew of all of the pain that it had caused myself and all the pain it caused my family. And And so I got real clear, or I became real clear that I needed to do something bigger, that was kind of bigger than myself, and which forced me then to kind of lead with example, so lead by example. So I quit drinking. If I'm going to run a global foundation for depression, and alcohol is a major depressant, and, you know, it was a commitment I made. And it's not, I mean, it's not an easy path, because I am confronted with my father's death and my own mental health on a continual ongoing basis, which can be hard and can be emotional, and emotions come through me, but it is a much more empowering way to live than continually kind of running from all of those feelings.
Which
I think is what you teach at the Respite so well, is how do you really get into that space and know that it's okay to go through the grief, to experience the grief, to experience all of the different emotions that go along with it, to know that it's okay that I go on a radio show and I cry in the first 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
That's a human experience, and that's okay, and that's a much more healing and powerful way to live than to run from it.
It is, and I'm so glad you mentioned the tears, because I was, in preparation for speaking with you today, I was imagining that some of the times in my own life where I have had the most strength, and I have to say that I'm for certain that the moments in my life where I've had the most courage and the most bravery have been when I have been on my knees in my walk-in closet sobbing on the floor.
Mm.
And that is the truth. That is, it takes great, ferocious, soldier-like, Medal of Honor-like, and the battle-like courage to allow ourselves to feel our grief, our sorrow, our anxiety, our anger deeply, to allow ourselves to dare to be that awake and that alive. And equally, we then experience, and I imagine you can speak to this, more joy, more ecstasy, more happiness, more excitement, more peace. The more we allow ourselves to wake up and be open and experience and feel our suffering, we are equally able to feel our joy. We cannot feel one without the other. And to live in a culture where we're very much encouraged to run, as you said, in our society, it's very easy to run from pain. And so much about what the model of heart-centered grief is about and our work at the Respite is about encouraging people to stand in with, you know, with great dignity, to stand in their feelings. You know, to stand in their feelings, whatever they're feeling, whatever losses they're feeling, and to understand that those feelings are actually a great key into a more meaningful life, into more joy, more ecstasy, more profound experience of being alive, more meaningful work. I mean, it's you know, I always want to say, it's not, you know, I'm not a fan of grieving myself personally. It hurts. You know what I'm saying? It hurts so bad. So it's, you know, and I, no matter how much of an expertise that I have, you know, I sit with people in the middle of despair. That's what I do, and that's what my gift is. But it doesn't mean that I'm not afraid, or it just also does not mean that no matter how much I know about the journey of feeling, that I don't get to skip any steps, right? I mean, I have to go through every single experience of it myself, because I, too, am only a human being and am also an incredible, powerful human being. And that's, friends, where we want to encourage you, that as you're hurting, as you're experiencing loss in your life, or you're reflecting on something that happened to you many years ago, to trust that learning to feel and giving yourself permission to feel is going to bring more depth and more meaning to your life, and will allow you to hear your own authentic voice inside of you speak to you about your calling in the world, where you want to give to the world. The thing that I want to say, and tell me your thoughts about this, Catherine, is that, you know, myself being a psychotherapist in practice for 22 years, and all of the personal and individual training that I myself have done, years of my own therapy, because of course I'm incredibly biased, I believe in therapy, I have to tell you, there is not any new age technique or psychological mumbo jumbo. There's nothing out there that has been more healing and helpful and empowering for me as an individual than my service to the world.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, just for me, like this commitment to IFRED and what we birthed. So this year we birthed a Schools for Hope program that is geared to teaching 10-year-olds hope based on research that hope is a teachable skill. And seeing kids and learning, first of all, that kids are attempting suicide at alarming, alarming rates. And, you know, many successful. And then doing something about it. So taking the pain of the loss and thinking, okay, what can we do for our children? And then developing and creating a program based on that. I mean, it's by far my proudest kind of work and what we've been able to do. But that would not have come through not having the pain. But it has been so healing because it's provided me an outlet for that pain.
Yes. I mean, it's this beautiful tapestry that's woven together, is that, you know, this incredible program that you're offering 10-year-olds, and I've seen that and have been amazed, you know, that, of course, hope is a teachable skill, and how that connects to your own story, and in a very, you know, in honor of Sunday for you and the 25th anniversary of your father's death, I mean, holding that with you in a very profound and sacred way of how you have chosen through your journey, through it being messy, through your own mistakes, your own humanity, you've chosen to take it. Right, me too, many. And to take it and to say, you know, how can I use this to help others? What can I do to help other human beings? And to really, I'm sure the listeners are incredibly inspired as I am, that now, you know, another piece of, you know, honoring your father's life and honoring the suffering that you and your family went through and others have gone through and that your father went through, that now there are 10-year-old children being taught hope. And, I mean, the only words I can say to that are amen. I mean, like, amen. You know, that is so incredible. And really, I mean, I think that it's so important for people to understand, you know, when we're speaking about the seven steps of the model, is that, you know, step six is service. And these steps are not, it's not neat and tidy. You know, being human is messy. It's not as though this model is a process. It's not, you know, you do step one and then you neatly and tidily do step two. It's an offering and a guide of what are the steps, for what order you do them in, how they can give you that dignity. Catherine was speaking about that as a young woman, she didn't have a guide. And she did what so many of us do and what the pain pulls us to do and what shame pulls us to do is to take it out on ourselves. We don't know what to do with this pain. And these seven steps that Krista, Adi, and I have co-created are designed to help you really look at what can I do with this pain a big piece of our work is about honoring our right to be fully human. I mean, that to me, I think, is a big part of my message in life is, you know, just the importance of our right to be completely, fully human. And that's what your work is about, is that, you know, to end the stigma of depression, there's nothing to be ashamed of. And that, as you said, this is a treatable disease. And that if people feel less isolated and less shame, then we give ourselves permission to reach out and get help, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I want to say about step six, friends, is that this is not about, you know, the moment that your heart breaks, you have to run out and start an organization. You know, this is about a journey. It's about knowing that through time and through support, the key is through support. I mean, Catherine and I both have sought out mentors and teachers, and the stacks of books and words around my bed is insane, you know, and the things that I'm constantly searching and seeking for inspiration and encouragement. I mean, it's a journey. It takes time. And moving and searching and seeking and listening to your own authentic voice inside, it's really trusting that the losses that have happened in your life have buried in your chest a treasure chest, that when you open it, when you dare to open it, it gives you great information about where your passion is calling you, where it's guiding you. And Catherine, you have so beautifully helped us today put, you know, really make the step six that much more tangible, that much more real, and that much more human. You know, it's not neat and tidy, and it is vibrant and dynamic, this incredible human journey of being alive.
I think what you said too is really important. I mean, it's not something happens to you and then you run out and do something about it. I mean, it can be years of processing and healing. I mean, there was so much internal healing that had to happen on my own before I could really go out and start using that energy for something good.
Yeah.
But it's like once you get in touch with what that energy is and really feel it and really understand, it can, instead of dragging you down, motivate you to places that you never imagined.
Yes, yes. And this is the part that's so important, is that we have to be really compassionate with ourselves. We have to be patient with our journey. And we have to get personal support from friends, from community, from open-hearted human beings that can be with you in the authenticity of who you are. Your therapist, you know, open-hearted people that you trust within a church community. I mean, wherever that is for you. But people that can be with you and your heart cracking open. You know, a lot of the time when we are going through a tremendous loss, the people who love us the most, it's so painful for them to see us in that much pain. And so sometimes we have to reach outside of our kind of normal community and meet others and reach out for others that are able and where there's a different connection with us and who are able to be with us in our pain and who are comfortable. I mean, there really are people like Catherine and like myself in the world. Rumi talks about, the poet Rumi speaks about, there are those who run towards the screaming. And there are people like that, you know, wild-hearted, crazy people like you and me, who can be with the grief in the world and who want that. And so I'm saying that to encourage all of you that there are people who will get you, who will understand you and support you on your journey of seeking and searching and healing your own heart as you're then led into what is all of this teaching me about myself, about the world, and about where I'm called to give back to the world? You know, where am I called to drop my pebble in the pond and that it will have a ripple effect, you know, across my community, across the world? So I had something I wanted to ask you. One, a couple more things, Catherine, while we have some time, is that, you know, this idea of teaching hope, that is fascinating to me. And I just wanted to give you a chance to speak more about that, and perhaps one, what is one of the ways that you see, you know, hope can be taught?
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject. Kind of the more I researched, the more it started making sense. I never really thought of it in that way. But we, you know, hopelessness is the primary symptom of depression, and it's the number one predictor of suicide. And so there are some key people that have done a lot of research in the arena of hope. So, you know, we have a curriculum with 10 lessons for students, 10-year-olds. And, I mean, we plan to expand it to all ages, mm-hmm. because it's so applicable. But, for instance, yeah. getting your brain in a hopeful state, so meditation and deep breathing, are two really good tools. Because if you're in a highly anxious state, it is very difficult to be hopeful.
Yes.
And so that's kind of one thing we teach. We teach about how to create a hope network. So, you know, you should always be able to identify one person in your world that you can kind of go to when you are feeling hopeless, kind of at the edge,
yeah.
at the end, or like not seeing any light. So kind
yeah.
of really sitting down and thinking about who would that be? How to, you know, a big thing, one of the big things we're taught in growing up is that success is all about reaching and attaining the goal. So we set mm-hmm. goals, and mm-hmm. when we reach those goals, we feel successful. But the reality is that goals can change all the time, and while they're great to kind of put in front of us, to kind of, you know, kind of like a carrot to move towards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being hopeful is about the journey. It's about how we feel along the way towards whatever it is
mm-hmm.
we're moving towards.
Mm-hmm.
And so teaching kind of how critical that is for kids, and knowing that goals and those change, circumstances happen, and so kind of what do we do in that change? But success is the feeling along the way. It's not reaching a destination.
Yes. Wow.
So
that's so important.
I know. And, you know, it's amazing how we're not taught, like how we're always taught we should be reaching for something. And
yes.
in that reaching yes. is a feeling of kind of lack, you know, because we're not there.
Yeah.
But it's,
wow.
It's the process. Yeah. So that's a big shift. We teach about the importance of sacredness. And so, you know, there may be a time in our life when we can't find anyone that understands us or anything we're reaching towards, but knowing that just there is something greater than ourselves, and that might be all we have to pull us through certain times or periods, and that is
yeah.
enough, and that it's kind of not all down to us to do something or to make some kind of action. So, you know, and then we have art exercises, and then again, giving is a part. So we have the kids write messages for hope to the incoming students, and
uh-huh.
it's so
love
important,
it.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's so important
yes.
for them to give hope to other kids that are coming into a new school year, a new classroom. And then they plant sunflowers in the fall, and then the kids are in the spring, and then the kids in the fall harvest those, receive the messages for hope, and then save the seeds to plant again in the spring and write messages for the new kids.
Everything about that is incredible. Everything about that is just badass, my friend. It's incredible. Everything about it. And it's brilliant to teach it to 10-year-olds. I get it. I so get it. And later I want to talk to you about other ideas I'm having as I'm listening to you. But because, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, you know, how powerful that is for adults. And you know, teaching that to children who have open hearts and who are formulating their values in the world is brilliant. And I do have to say, I imagine there are listeners out there that are over 18 years old.
I know,
over
right?
65, who are saying,
yeah.
Man, I want to go through those exercises. That's incredible.
I know.
Oh,
that's
incredible.
Thank you. Thank
yes,
you.
It's truly very brilliant. And how it all, again, weaves together around rebranding. You know,
right.
that it not, you know, not the human being with the head in the hands, but this gorgeous view of the sun, a sunflower, and how, you know, taking those seeds, that evolution of death and rebirth, that there's always hope. It's very powerful and it's very brilliant. I'm so
Aww.
Proud of you.
Aww,
and I want to ask
you.
Yes, I want to ask you, Catherine, so... And this is a very personal thing, as we'll begin to close in a few moments. So tell us, friend, tell me about Sunday. How are you going to nurture and take care of yourself on Sunday, this very important anniversary in your life of your father's death?
I know. You know, I've thought about it. You know, what do I want to do? Or ironically, it's, you know, well, not ironically. I mean, I do believe that once you get attuned, everything kind of falls into place. But my brother is coming in town from California. He happens to be coming into town for something else. And I only learned less than a week ago that it was 25 years on Sunday. I knew the general date, and it's my brother's name is Fred, and my foundation was named after him because he's been such an amazing support throughout my life.
Wow.
You know, both of my brothers are at different times, and I will hang out, and I'll probably do some writing. I write for the Huffington Post and Psych Central and do some creating. So really kind of like take whatever feelings and do something creative that helps me, you know. And also, too, to kind of like step back and reflect on just kind of where I've been and where I'm going and appreciate, you know, the people in my life that have supported me in getting here and on the journey. So the people that are alive that inspire me. You know, a lot.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
That's perfect, and it's beautiful, and I get every bit of that. I mean, reflecting upon the past and from where you have come and evaluating and you know, holding and embracing the beauty of the present and seeing what's calling you forward in the future, all in the honor of your family's love, of your father and his spirit continuing to live on, and your beautiful, gorgeous story. And I want to tell you something that's really cool. On Sunday, Chris Saadi and I, my dear friend and colleague and someone that's very special to Catherine as well, we are going to be speaking at Unity in Charlotte, North Carolina on Sunday morning about how our tears are the source of our great passion. So I will be thinking of you, Catherine, and who you are and your story and your father on Sunday morning, and holding him in my heart as I speak about these very kinds of things that we've been sharing today. And I want to say that through Catherine's generosity, through iFred, she has made available free access to the streaming version of the model of heart-centered grief. So you can go to, they can email me at the respite. So it's mandy@therespite.org. And I will send you a link and the password for you to be able to stream the 7 steps of the model. And what that means is you will receive 7 separate sessions of Chris, the Adi, and I coaching you through these seven steps as though we're there with you, guiding you through this journey, giving you the tools, giving you the support of how to move through your loss, whatever it is. If a relationship has ended, if a dream has died, if you have lost your job, I mean, this model is designed to support anyone going through any life transition and change. And these streaming versions are available, and we still have 30 to offer. So I hope that you will email me, and I would love to send that your way. And Kathryn, thank you for the generosity of iFred in sponsoring this for people. There is this incredible relationship between grief and depression, and I think why we have this connection, the respite has this connection with iFred that we do. One of the reasons is that when people don't feel their grief, when we don't give ourselves permission to feel, it leads to a despairing hopelessness. Feeling your grief, friends, will not make you depressed. Not feeling your grief is what will create depression within yourself and can lead to that despairing hopelessness. And I want to honor so much, Kathryn, the work that you've been doing in the world to empower people in a very real way. What are the tools once we do experience depression, how we can move through that through education, through information, through talk therapy, through med therapy, through meditation. I mean, there are so many powerful tools out there to help people who are battling depression. And your passion around shifting the stigma to take away the shame that it's a part of being human. There are times in, you know, my belief is that in most human beings, I know it's not true for everyone, and for most human beings, we all go through a period of depression in our lives. You don't have to have, quote, the disease of depression to experience depression. We all experience it at some point in our lives because life is very difficult. As well as it is amazing and beautiful, it's difficult, as you all know. So if you please, Kathryn.
No, and like you said, it's learning how to move that energy through, which I think, and that to me is such a preventative approach to depression, to falling into a major depressive disorder, is learning how to feel your grief, to experience, and to move it through you, which is what you all do and teach so profoundly. It's brilliant. Is brilliant.
Thank you so much. It is about teaching empowerment and bringing dignity to our right to feel, that it's nothing to be ashamed of or embarrassed about. You know, you're not, you know, dwelling or, you know, being a wuss. You know, if you're feeling, you're being alive, you're being courageous, you're being human, and you have a right to that. We all do, my friends, we all do. So if you want to learn more about Kathryn, we will have information about her posted on the Respite Facebook page. This broadcast will be posted on the Respite Facebook page. It will be on ifred.org, which is Kathryn's nonprofit. And you are always welcome to email me. I do grief coaching and all types of work with people around the world through Skype at mandy@therespite.org. I want to thank you for being with us and sharing your very gorgeous human story, Kathryn. Thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you so much for letting me be here. And I want to say, too, May 2nd, we're having our Global Day for Hope. So this year, May 2nd, we're the first year that we're picking a day and we're planting sunflowers around the world. So any foundation that you work with or your local hospital or community garden, plant sunflowers on May 2nd. And, yeah, it's going to be amazing. And then selfies.
That just gave me chills. Global Day of Hope. Well, the rest of it will be all about promoting that. Cindy is writing it down right now. We will be all about joining you in that. So, friends, if you want to to listen to this broadcast again, you can find it on next week on the Respite website, therespite.org. It will be posted on our Facebook page, The Respite, a Center for Grief and Hope, in just a few minutes. I send you all a lot of energy. Join me in holding Catherine in your heart on this Sunday and her beautiful family and their incredible story. And may we each give ourselves more and more permission to be fully alive and fully human. Y'all have a great weekend. God bless. Take care. Goodbye, dear Catherine. Have a great weekend, my friend.
Oh, you too. Thank you so very much.
Okay.
Love to all.
Okay, bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.